Hello and welcome to the Mind of Magnus. Our show has a simple premise. We're here to share the stories and life adventures of others to help expand our minds. I'm Matt Austin, and here's your host, Magnus.
Hey, folks, welcome again to another edition of the Mind of Magnus. I thank everyone who's been messaging in. We're having a blast. I'm glad people are enjoying the show. I got some great guests lined up, and thank you for suggestions for it. I really want to say a thank you to all those wonderful folks having the Factoid Hotline. I did not realize I needed that in my life, but oh my God, do I need that in my life. The facts I've been getting are blowing my mind, which is amazing. I'll be sharing that link and everything else later on. But I want to take a moment before the show started just to give a little bit of a preamble to why I really wanted this guest on the show tonight. When I put this list together, when Matt and the team for Lunch Door asked me to do the show again, I had a few people that I definitely wanted to have on my show. And top of the list was this guy here, Kenny Biddle. He's CSI fellow and chief investigator for the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. He's at the center of the inquiry for here in New York State. And he promotes and really tries to push the concept of what critical thinking is, the idea why being skeptical is a good thing, and why promoting of science and science thinking is better for everyone involved. So I met this man a handful of years back. He's a phenomenal dude, and I just cannot wait to talk to him about the show. So this is a little bit of a preamble, and I want to, before we get to the interview, which is a very awesome interview, I wanted to give a reason why I wanted to have this man on here. So without further ado, I want to ramble with this man. So, Biddle, thank you for joining in. So what's your official title? I want to get this right.
It goes back and forth. The official title that I was hired for is chief investigator. And then sometimes they add on of paranormal claims. But I am the chief investigator for CSI, which is the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. And that's a sub-division of the Center for Inquiry. So we're based in Buffalo, New York. Actually, Amherst, which is a suburb of Buffalo. Mm-hmm. And our headquarters is here, that I'm in my office right now. And this is the greatest job in the world, honestly.
I can only imagine. Congrats. You guys have, I want to start that how I met you, aside from being like new of you, we have mutual friends in the ghost hunting and paranormal world. Cause I always love that. Like in my brain, I want to know the questions they have no answers, the big weary questions, that sort of stuff. And how we met it face to face, one of my first things, one of the strongest memories I have is that you and I were doing a ghost hunt it was a live broadcast ghost hunt out in Indiana. And we were given the keys to a place. I won't say the name right now. Well, maybe later on if we want to go into that route. But we were given.
Why don't you whisper it to me?
Oh, there you go. Look at that. Well done. Yeah, dude. So we were given the key for that place, the 4th of July weekend. Right. And my memory, one of my favorite memories of you is after the guy left, I pop a partial wall off and I see a hole in the wall or hole in the floor. And we're like trying to scavenge, and you come popping out covered in cobwebs and thinking like, I found a speaker, and you have a speaker in your hand and you just came popping out like it's a whack-a-mole. And you are there being like, look what I found, guys. And that is the perfect Kenny Biddle. Like, you are willing to climb through under a ground to find where a possible speaker may be for someone's messing with you. So, and from that point in time, I'm like, Kenny Biddle is one of my favorite people on this planet. So
that's great. I love how you say that. I love how you tell that story. I'm gonna clip this out.
Oh, please do. My gosh. So, and I loved it. Like, we and the team that were there, we had a blast. It was a live broadcast, and it was like, one of the things I like about you is that you're along for the ride, but also when you see bullshit happening, which is the best thing with podcasts, we can swear. When you see bullshit happening, you don't have a problem calling them out or calling a person right, like a liar or stuff that way. It's one of those things that I really want to have you on the show. So,
I'll address that real quick. I think you should always be honest when you're doing this kind of stuff and not like sugarcoat shit. Really, I mean, and if you see somebody doing something wrong, call it out. And it's not always that they're lying per se. It's maybe they just mistook something, and you want to point it out and say, no, you know, I don't think that is what is really happening. Let's try it again. Mm-hmm. But if they are hoaxing something or if they are faking something, you got to have your proof. You got to make sure before you call them a faker or a hoaxer, you got to have it. And like, if I have that, I will definitely show it and say, look, you know, this. Or if I think they're lying, I'll say, well, let's go to the tape, you know, let's go to the video. Let's do this. We have to show our work. You know, like I'm sure you and I, we both grew up in school. Always show your work. You can't just put the answer down. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I see that in a lot of this community where people just put their answer down. They don't show their work.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of my things I was very happy to see is social media has brought us back together. You are a TikTok guy, and your account on TikTok, if you don't follow, what's the TikTok account, if you don't mind me?
I think it's Kenny Biddle 42.
Gotcha. Ooh, nice. They answered everything. Like so you take time to not just address the trending cool ghost video you may have seen or something moving, which is one of my favorite things. What the internet has always offered, the creepy stuff caught on camera is a magic thing that I love seeing. But watching you on TikTok, I urge everyone to watch it because you take the time to address these cool videos happening, how it may happen. And also you recreate things. Like one of my favorite things is like, you know, this is how I do it. This is the you should have a sponsorship from Fishing Line because how durable and versatile Fishing Line is.
My Leighton line.
Oh, there my gosh. That's amazing. Yeah. So I got to say, the TikTok really is what brought me back to the world of Kenny Biddle and seeing you address these videos that are getting, I mean, some of these videos I see have millions and millions of views. Right. And like, do you get them sent to you? What's the process? Or you just find them? What's the process that this happens?
It's both. I get tagged in them. People send them to me. And if I'm just bored at night, I just scroll through and then I happen to see something. I'm like, you know, like I can do that. and sometimes like a lot of the videos I have a setup, you know, like I play the original video and then I usually do something where I'm looking at the camera and I look over. And I'm like, yeah, we can do that. Mm-hmm. And then I get up and run. And I really do that. Like I'll be sitting down on the couch at home at night. My wife is next to me and I'll be scrolling through and I see something. I look at her and then she kind of sees me like turn my head. So she looks over. I'm like, oh, we're doing a video. and I get up and start doing it and setting up. And I mean, she's great too. My wife is a good sport because she puts up with a lot of shit from me. Mm. I rearrange furniture sometimes to match the environment. I borrow stuff from either the office or I'll run home, grab stuff, bring it back here just so I can set it up to recreate this alleged experience or this alleged activity. And as you said, like I recreate them because I want to show people it can be done. Mm-hmm. And with that, it doesn't mean that something is absolutely fake. I mean, with some people, yeah, I think they're definitely faking. The channels are just, when you have 3-4 videos you upload every day of activity in the same place, you're faking it. But there's people out there to put stuff up like once a week or something like that. So I want to be able to show like, yeah, it can be done. We can do this. We got to think it through. You got to look around and see what's available to you in a normal household. And I mean, Fishing Line or Thread. Like Fishing Line is the generic term now, and that's just what it is. And like even my Leighton line, it's Fishing Line. But I have other stuff. I have a Magician's Thread. So this stuff is really, really thin. So much so that I don't even know if I can find the end of it now. Wait.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, I can't even see it.
I'm holding it. Wow. In front of my face.
Wow, I can't even see it at that level. Like those, there's a camera happening. Those we can follow.
I want to show you.
Holy cow.
There you go. So that's how thin this stuff is. And I can pull certain things with it from a good distance. So you can buy this online. You can get fishing wire. You can get thread. Regular sewing thread works, you know, and it's really easy to set some of this stuff up. Once you look and you start thinking, all right, where can I hide? What doesn't, and this is something I teach all the time. It's not always about what you see. It's about what you don't see.
Hmm.
Like where can people hide? Where can you put a piece of tape that holds that thread there? Cause a lot of things, if you make like a balloon move on its own, which is really easy. Or if you make a chair or table or whatever, slide across the floor, you can do that with thread. You can do that with fishing line. And then with a good tug, it snaps off. Mm-hmm. So then when you go up with the camera and look real close, it's not there anymore.
See, critical thing. I appreciate you being a handy person that likes to build this stuff. Like you don't just talk about it. You're like, this is how you do it. This is tape stuff on. Right. It's amazing. So actually, before I get down this rabbit hole, I would love to have how do you define being a skeptic? Like, how do you define skepticism?
I define skepticism pretty simply. It's about having doubt about some kind of claim. And that's pretty much it. You know, like, you have doubt. I'm skeptical. If you say that, you know, you have a miracle pill that, you know, if you take this pill tomorrow night, you're going to lose 10 pounds. I mean, I'm skeptical of that. I have some doubts. I want to see the proof. I want to see the data. I want to see it really happen. So it's not necessarily that I don't believe it. I just want to see it in action. I want to see the evidence behind it. And nice. And that's really what skepticism is to me. It's just about having doubt because you're not sure and you want to get to the truth.
Yeah, it's not that you don't believe in anything. You just hope to learn better, right?
Right.
That's the true thing. And that comes from critical thinking. And like, actually, that's a good thing. How do you define critical thinking? And how does Kenny Biddle describe critical thinking?
That's a big one. That's not so simple.
Good. That's what my show's about. Keep on your toes, Kenny Biddle.
I mean, that's about looking at the little details. That's about looking at your perspective. That's about knowing your own biases, recognizing them, and then overcoming them. Because if you have certain beliefs, you're going to look at the world through those beliefs, through their filters. You have to learn how to push them aside and recognize that maybe you are fooling yourself. Maybe you're lying to yourself in order to further that belief and keep that belief strong. It's about looking at details. It's about not taking people at their word, not because people aren't trustworthy. And to be honest, not everyone is trustworthy. I mean, they're really not. And even the best of us that really try can make mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. So, they may not be like actively lying. They may just be what their beliefs are telling them. They just translate that way.
Right.
Now, I mean, you're like me. I think you're kind of a recovering Catholic. Weren't you raised in a Catholic household as well?
Yes, yeah. I was.
So that definitely has a lot of things. Like me, I've had to, not that I'm religious in the slightest now, but there was definitely the foundational stuff that I processed a lot of things through that as I was aging and learning more, I became aware of what my thoughts were, where those biases and, you know, expectations came from.
And repeating things that I was told by like my parents or my family, you know, like they kept telling me, this is the way it is. You have to do this or you have to do that. You have to believe this. And me with my curiosity, I mean, I'm a huge nerd, and I think nerds are the perfect people for critical thinking because we know fantasy. We live fantasy, so we can see the differences and start looking at why should I believe that? Why should I believe what you're telling me? You know, if I ask you a question and you get defensive or angry because I asked a question about it, something's wrong. Something's not right with this situation. Mm-hmm. And that just spurs my curiosity even more. It's neat. Like you said that I'm a recovering Catholic. I don't think I'm recovering. I think I recovered.
Nice.
I'm a recovered Catholic because I left that years ago. I have no doubts anymore. When it comes to religion, you know, if it makes you feel good for your personal life, that's one thing. But if you go out and tell other people that, you know, you have to believe what I believe, then there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's where I, you know, I'll speak up. But yeah. I mean, it's hard when you grow up with those beliefs because that's all you knew, you know, like from a young age before you can remember anything, you were drilled with this information. So it becomes your worldview. You see everything through that lens. I mean, I don't remember exactly when, but it was sometime in grade school before I realized like there were other people that weren't Catholic. And I didn't realize like Catholic and Christian didn't mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was all just the same, you know, and that was it. And I remember we had a neighbor that was Jewish, and I always got the thing, oh, well, he's Jewish and that's okay. Understood that. Yeah. I never understood that. Like, what's Jewish? I don't know what that means. And nobody would explain it to me except that they don't believe what we believe. And basically they're going to burn in hell. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what, why? what? I don't understand.
It's a big question. Oh my gosh. Yeah. 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 It's very fortunate to be born in the, like I, when I got to a maybe like a teenager, I was thinking about it. Actually, it's funny. My father had a question once to me. I was like teenager. He's like, "Do you think that the Romans actually believed in their gods?" And my father, very intelligent man. He was kind of questioning things. He still questions stuff. It's very nice. And I looked at him like, "Yeah, it's very much the same as you believe in your God, 100%." And I watched his face kind of go, wait, how, you know, like, it's very fortunate that you were born in this continent and this time to believe in this God and not be in India and have Vishnu as your, you know, like, right. How, you know, once I started getting older, I kind of processed, and I always still kind of was going through the steps of like, maybe they are right, maybe not right. I don't know. I mean, I wish them to be right. I'd love to have the end of the whole ride show up at a cool banquet with all my good friends around. I'm cheering for that. But
yeah,
until that point in time, I'm just trying to make the best of this world and this understanding of stuff. So you kind of move away from the process of understanding religions and stuff, but you were a ghost hunter full on, like trying to prove it. You had all the devices, you had all the blinking lights and stuff for many, many years, I imagine, yes. Right?
Yep. So yeah, I was a ghost hunter for, let's see, from 1997, I joined a local group and I didn't know anything. I mean, I, again, with growing up in the 70s and 80s, we had the TV shows In Search Of, Unsolved mm-hmm. Mysteries, stuff like that. And I loved it. You know, you had the occasional documentary that came on that was about some kind of supernatural thing. And back then you had to be in front of the TV or you missed it. It was gone forever. So I was there. I was glued to the television set, that big 3-ton television set that was in the living room.
Sitting on the floor. Yeah.
That you were the remote control for. You know, like I was sitting there watching it and just fascinated with it. And, you know, and I was like, I want to do this someday. I really want to do this. I want to go out and see this because it's amazing. And then once I got out of high school, I went to tech school. I got married and I was like, well, you know, I'm an adult now. I have some adult money. Maybe I can do some of this and joined a local group. Didn't know anything about this. So mm-hmm. I just listened to them and went along with them for a while, had my own group for a while. And then I started realizing, like, you know, I start having doubts, looking at cameras, especially photography. I loved photography. I got into that and started looking at what people were presenting as evidence and saying, well, I don't think so. And then I had an experience in Gettysburg during a paranormal conference mm-hmm. where I was mistaken for a ghost. I was out in the fields on the battlefields, because that's where everybody goes mm-hmm. When you go to Gettysburg. And one night we were out there in the woods, and this is the short version of the story, but out there in the woods, the rangers had told us this was a special spot. Nobody goes there. The rangers avoid it, blah, blah, you know, all this stuff. I think they were screwing with us, honestly, mm-hmm. but we took it hook, line, and sinker. We're in there at night and waiting for stuff to happen. And here comes 3 cars. They drive down the road and it's right by the wheat field. So if anybody knows, you drive along the wheat field, it'll be on your right side. And there's a patch of woods right up before the bend. And that's where we were. These cars pull over. See a bunch of people get out. They got laser pointers. They got flashlights. They're yelling. They're screaming. They're joking around. And I started getting mad. Like, these guys are disturbing us. Like, we're trying to do our, you know, our investigation here. And they're bothering us. And then they started walking towards us. And I was like, oh, shit. You know, like, now they're getting close. They're going to find us.
Called. Yeah, yeah.
They got really close. And I finally lost my temper. I marched out of the woods. I yelled at them to get out, go away, stop it. You're messing this up. I don't remember exactly what I said, but they turn around. Like, they stopped, turned around, ran back to the cars, got in, drove away. Didn't see them the rest of the night. Awesome. Next morning, we come down to the conference, and this group is talking about seeing an apparition the night before. So we started listening in, and the details are exactly what I did. So I went up and I looked at them. I'm like, I recognize you guys. That was me. And they're like, no, it wasn't you. I was like, yeah. And I started giving details, like who they were, what they were wearing, what they were carrying. The
clearly. Yeah. But they still don't believe you to be.
No. And the last line, and this is what really hit me, is one of them turned around and said, stop trying to steal our spotlight.
Oh,
and that was it. And then, I had that aha moment. Like,
That's why they do it. Yeah.
Okay. That's okay. This is what they're there for, you know, and that's a shame because I'm giving them information. And then I really started thinking about what I do. Like, how many times did I ignore something because it got me attention? You know, how many times did I ignore it because I wanted it to be true, that I wanted to believe so much that I wanted it to be true and I just ignored something? And then it really, like, I got pissed off at myself and went through an angry phase. And then I started learning, like, all right, let me look at the skeptical literature on this. Mm-hmm. And I found, I just happen to have a copy here, Skeptical Inquirer magazine.
Nice.
Backwards. I found them. Started reading the works of like Ben Radford and Joe Nickell. And I was like, wow, these people are really going out and they're not just sitting around doing nothing, you know, talking to the dark, asking questions to the dark room. They're actually investigating these claims. They're researching it. They're trying to find the people that are named in the stories. They're trying to figure out what actually happened. They're getting records, newspaper articles, all this. And then they're going to the place and really, they're not doing a ghost hunt. They're investigating the specific claims that are coming out of there. So like if somebody said that footsteps are heard coming down the main staircase at 2 a.m. every morning, that's what they were doing. They were there at 1 in the morning and they were setting up cameras and waiting by the steps to see what would happen. And then finding out it was the next door neighbor because their steps was connected through the wall and you could hear their footsteps coming down. Because the guy had to go to work or coming home from work or something like that. I was like, this is amazing.
Which is what you really want to have. The goal is to find the truth of the scenario, not the best story. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I love a good story. Right. I love that. But to get to the true truth of the matter is what truly what I want to have happen. Quick side note. I'm so glad to tell the story because one of my guests, this is the question I had, it came in from Jonathan, was, are you in fact a ghost of Gettysburg? So someone must be a fan of you that had that question came in. So the question I had, are you in fact a ghost of Gettysburg? So that was from Jonathan. So thank you for the question that Kenny Biddle is already, he's premonitions. He knew how to answer the question first. So
pretty good. What's funny is that not too long after that, a few years after that, we were taking one of the tours because at one time I know there was like 14 or 15 ghost tours in Gettysburg. And if you've ever been to Gettysburg, it's not a big town.
No,
it's small. So if you're, if everyone's having like a 7 o'clock tour that has like 25, 30, 40 people on it, that's a lot of people, a lot of groups. But we took a tour and they start telling this story about a group of ghost hunters. I'm sorry, paranormal investigators that were out at the wheat field and they saw an apparition one night and they're telling the story. And I'm like, that's me. That's me.
It's still going around. It didn't end that day. It kept being
kept going.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That is amazing. My God.
So, and there's nothing I could say because it's like 30 people. They're all in this, on this tour. And I'm going to be the jackass that goes, oh, that was me. That wasn't a ghost. Yeah. Right. So.
Yeah. And also hard to describe a way from your perspective, despite you knowing.
Right.
Now, is that, that's an interesting tie-in too. Like there's some times where you probably are the person that understands the full scenario, but there's a room full of people all believing it to be true. Do you find yourself, is it either just be quiet and let them enjoy themselves? Or are you compelled to like, if you want to learn more, here's my something like what's the, what, like, it's,
it really depends on the situation. If people are telling stories and I'm there to observe, because sometimes I go to events just to observe. I just want to watch and see what people say and how they interact and maybe the reasoning behind things. But if it comes out to something that's just so out there, so far out in left field, I can't help but raise my, it's almost like my hand goes up by itself. It's just like, I gotta say something. I gotta say something. And especially if it's, to be honest, I have to read the crowd, you know, to see if this is an environment where they might be accepting of it. Because if you just, if you raise your hand or you speak up and just start contradicting what a speaker says, you're going to look like the asshole no matter what, even if you're right. So you really have to read the crowd. And if it's a, if it's kind of a crowd that I know a lot of the people in the audience, I feel a little bit safer about speaking up. Or if it's something like if there's a speaker and they're talking about a certain topic, especially when it comes to science, when they start doing scientific investigation and they're completely wrong, mm-hmm. then I'll probably say something, because I really don't want them. I don't want people leaving with wrong information. Mm-hmm. And it sucks, because when you are listed as a speaker, and I'm just going on like on conferences and stuff, and if you're pictured on the poster, you know, and your name's on there, you are looked at as an authority. Mm-hmm. So you really have a responsibility to deliver the best information possible. And I don't see that. Not in a lot of paranormal conferences. I do not see that. I see a lot of opinion. I see a lot of belief. I see a lot of repetitive stuff where they just repeat what they see or hear on TV. And there's very little deep dive research. There's no references. I don't see anybody reference their materials, mm-hmm. Which is something that we should. Like my videos, my articles that I put out, I reference them. You see the reference links so you can go check my information and make sure that I'm right, mm-hmm. or that I'm wrong, and call me out on it by all means. But there's too much going on. There's too much information being put out there that's just incorrect. And it's a shame, because there is no fact checking. I mean, how many times have you been to a paranormal conference where people just go in and they just listen, they absorb it, and then they leave? Mm-hmm. There's no fact checking. There's no questioning, you know, and if there is questioning, it's more like, well, I want to do this. How can I do it the same way you do it?
How can I do it? What devices right. should I buy? Not necessarily what way to think about how to handle the device better, or even what it's even doing.
Right.
That's the thing I see. What also drives me nuts, I used to go to a lot more conventions, and I would go to one convention where a story is being told, and then it's like a game of telephone. The next convention, the story pops up again, but it's a little bit bigger, a little bit better. There's some person, like suddenly the ghost moved two things, or the chair flew out of the room versus just, and I mean, don't get me wrong, it's the human condition. A good, like a fishing story, the fish always gets bigger. People always want to like entertain, and you know, it's part of our, we want to be remembered well or tell a good story. So without even thinking about it, I think there's a little bit of embellishment happens and stuff, but that's where references play a factor. Like you go back right. to this book, it's written down at this key thing, whatever it may be.
With telling those stories over and over again, there still is a responsibility to give the truth, mm-hmm. you know? And if the story is getting bigger, then you're falsifying it. You're adding details that aren't there. And in any investigation, as Reacher tells us, and if you haven't watched Reacher, you need to. Mm-hmm. Details matter. Mm-hmm. In an investigation, details matter. And if the details change from story to retelling, something's wrong. And there's loss of trust there. If I come to one of your conventions or one of your talks, and you tell me a story about how you were in a room and a lamp moved by itself and it freaked you out, you left. Then the next time, a lamp and a telephone moved, and then the next time the entire table floated at the same experience, then I don't trust you at all, mm-hmm. because you were trying to make it better. You're trying to impress people instead of doing quality work. Mm-hmm. You want people to look at you and you want attention rather than doing quality work. And that's disrespectful and deceitful to your audience.
Yeah, my gosh. Totally. There's a place for storytellers. And don't get me wrong, I love a good storyteller, but then tell me you're a storyteller and I'll approach it that way versus investigative reporter. You know, investigative reporter, the story should stay the same. That's the trick. If you're telling me different things, don't get me wrong, I love to be around a bonfire and hearing a great ghost story. I want to be this. I'm the big poster on the wall at Mulder's. I want to believe. Perpetually, I want to experience these things, but in the end of it, I want the truth. I want what is truly happening. I want to know how it all works. And that's hence the mind of Magnus. I want to know everything. I want to understand it all.
If you're going to take that title on, if you're going to give yourself the title of paranormal investigator, and again, all these titles are self-styled, you give them to yourselves. And if you're going to call yourself an investigator in any way, then you should fucking investigate.
Yes.
Bottom line, if you're not investigating, you're not doing your job. Correct. And you're fooling people. And the same with people that call themselves like researchers. Actually research. Don't just look at like different paranormal websites and see what version of the story they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, actually dig, find the original sources, original articles, original books, documents, maps, whatever. Actually do the research, and I really don't see that, and it's a shame.
Yeah, they do a Google search on the first two hits, and whatever works best in your story is what they do. So now we were talking before when we first got going. You have an amazing office behind you here at the Center of Inquiry. You collect crazy weird stuff. You have a collection of, it seems like everything. I don't even know where to start with this question is. So can you enlighten me what I see behind you or cool things you may have?
All right. So I'm looking at my screen now so I can see what you can see. So over here is more like my audio visual. You can't actually see. Let me see if I can show you a little bit on the side here. So I got a monitor hooked up to a old style, actually VCR behind there, VCR DVD player. It takes everything so I can look at old video, record them off of there because sometimes I need to recreate videos with
old tech. Oh my God. Old tech. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little Panasonic arm. Oh my God. The shoulder cannons.
Like this is over the shoulder. Like this with the VHS, the full tape that goes in there.
I had one growing up. I love those things. I kind of miss them sometimes.
Oh, so. It still works. It's great. I just, there should be a video coming out on the CFI YouTube channel where I recreated a, footage that the Warrens took in 1988.
Wow.
So, and I used that camera because I wanted the same quality, the same really shitty quality camera. So that's it. The whiteboard here that you see, that's all my projects that I got going on. So right now I'm at 20, there's 21 topics up there or projects that I'm working on that I can't tell you about. There's a couple pop figures. There's a lot of reference material. These are all the blue binders. That's all the last 48 years of Skeptical Inquirer magazine.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I didn't realize that not that long. I mean, I love that. Yeah.
We're 48 years now. So 26, we're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary.
Oh, congrats. You guys having a big party? Cause I'll definitely, there's
going to be a party. There's going to be a party. Yeah. I mean, I party every week. Of course. The rest of these are books, reference books. So lots of science books, magic books, regional ghost stories, and then all kinds of like psychic and metaphysical and Bigfoot, UFOs. And then what you can't see because I can't stretch the camera is about 200 or so vintage cameras, video and still photography, all the way from like 1900 plate photography cameras all the way up through when the Sony Mavica first came out. I have the first two Sony Mavicas that were released.
Wow.
And then all the way up until, you know, your phones and the modern video cameras. So I have all those because so many photographs and video clips that I get are from vintage cameras. And I like to have the original camera so I can do it, you know, see what it does. Because different cameras do different things. And not necessarily when you set it that way. Sometimes it's just a natural artifact. So I like having the original stuff. And then
your brain is amazing. Your brain. I love a person that processes that level when something comes to them. My gosh, continue on. Sorry, I'm
details, man. Details. It's like you tell me, because we talked about it. I don't know. Were we talking about it during the show or before the show? I don't know. But we were talking about TikTok videos, and when I said like I rearrange furniture, I do that because I want to try to get the environment as close as the original video that I'm trying to recreate. So I'll move tables, I'll move chairs, sofas, whatever, in order to get that same setup so that I can figure out like, all right, where might they have hidden something, you know, a person or a line or something. So, and I think that's why I fit in really good here because it's attention to detail. You have to go that extra mile. The opening case that you talked about when we first met at that place that we only will whisper about, you know, like that, I went into the basement and then there was a crawl space where that hole came up and it was maybe like 2.5 feet high and it was all dirt floor that was open to the outside. So there was mud and dirt, but hey, you know, I got to get over to that hole. I got to see what's going on in that environment because
the claim was that there was whispering happening behind that wall. You can like the moment I the reason I appreciate you, I'm unscrewing the wall and pulling the stuff off, and you were already downstairs trying to figure the other end. And it was this happy moment being like, okay. And it changed my tone, because I'm a person, like I said, I want to believe. I hear these claims, and people like Doug and some other people told me they were there the year before, and they're like, we heard whispering, and I want to experience things. I truly, truly, really want to try to have these sort of encounters. But if you're trying to pull one over on me, I'm going to try to point it out to you. And it is something that I definitely felt very happy to have another person like you that is like willing to be on the team, but also if you're bullshitting, we're going to look through it. So,
right. Yeah. I cannot stand that. I love the mystery. I mean, I can't show you, but I have Scooby-Doo gang tattooed here.
You very much are a Velma of a Scooby-Doo. You're the brain of the operation.
I try.
You look great in a little miniskirt too, I hear. So,
well, you know, only on Thursdays. I love a good mystery. I love it, and that's when I know I'm hooked. When something just piques my interest, and I'm totally obsessed with it. My self-diagnosed OCD kicks in, and I'm on it like 24/7. And I want to find a conclusion. I really do, and I'll do whatever it takes to get there. And if I find that it's a mistake, so be it. You know, if we find the actual cause and it was a mistake, somebody made or misinterpreted what they saw or what they heard, and it was an honest mistake, so be it. That's how I'm going to present it. But if I do find out you're purposely hoaxing something, then the gloves are off, you know, and I think you're scum, because you are, especially if you're charging people.
Yeah, that's the thing that drives me nuts. Like, if you want having, if somebody brings you comfort, if you believe that grandma's visiting you and you're smiling, if I find out it's wrong, I may not even say something to you. I'm like, oh, well, whatever. But like some of those business, like that, when we were there, they're trying to be an Airbnb to make money. And they're trying to push this as a narrative of what could be happening. If you're trying to get money out of people, you're in a different ballgame now. And I'll approach you at a different ballgame. So,
and to be fair, like this was many, many years ago. Different owners at the time. Yeah, if anyone figures out what we're talking about, you know, it was different owners, but still, I mean, yeah, if they're promoting something like that and it turns out that you have a speaker in the basement and that goes where the line is actually laid out, not just thrown. It wasn't like something was thrown into that crawl space because they didn't like it anymore.
Yeah. It wasn't garbage. It was clearly set up for the thing.
Yeah, and the line was deliberately laid out in a certain pattern to get to where they needed it to go. So that was deliberate deception.
Yeah. Now, the question is, I do have a few. Actually, some of the people asked, do you actually have, like, what is your beliefs now? Are you a person that, like, if you don't mind me prying into this level too, but like you get into something. Do you have an interest now that you're trying to figure out? And, like, do you believe in ghosts? Are you a person? Or what do you think?
I don't hide from pretty much any question. So you can ask whatever you want. So when it comes to beliefs, this is something I get asked often. And my response is always going to be the same. I don't have beliefs. I don't maintain beliefs, because I used to. Back in my Catholic days, I had a lot of beliefs. They were part of my core being. It was who I was. Mm-hmm. And when they started to be shattered from inquiry, when I started to learn more and understand that I was wrong and these beliefs don't really jive with what the real world is, it was difficult. It was a struggle. You know, leaving the faith, if you will, was a struggle. And I don't want to go through that again. So basically, instead of having beliefs, which are very, very hard to change, I have ideas. And I stole this idea. This is not my own idea. I stole it from Dogma. The movie Dogma.
Kevin Smith.
Yes. Love it. I love how they explain it, that just have ideas, because I can change an idea. If you give me new information, I can incorporate that. If it's valid, if the new information is valid, I can incorporate that and I can change, evolve my ideas about what's going on. So when it comes to ghosts, spirits, demons, and afterlife, the idea I have right now is no, they do not exist. I haven't seen any evidence that's sufficient enough to pass any kind of scientific scrutiny to cause me to change my idea. I'm still looking. That's why I do this. This number one reason why I do this job, because I'm looking for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, no, I don't. And that goes for everything. Like if we talk about UFOs or aliens visiting the planet, no, I don't think that's happened yet. My idea is that it's just the science is way out there. The distances are too far. It hasn't happened. Bigfoot. I mean, there's problems with that. There's scientific, there's biological, physiological problems with this. So no, I don't think that there's a 8, 9, 10 foot tall, 900 pound, bipedal, monster roaming around the woods, called Bigfoot. I just don't think it's happening. So,
if someone came in, like you said, your idea would change if suddenly, someone walks in, one got hit by a bus and there's one laying dead in the road. You're like, oh, now it is it doesn't affect you to change your idea, right?
If a Bigfoot, wandered into the outskirts of a city, got hit by a bus. One, I'd be happy that nobody went out and shot him.
That's the reason I use that expression. Right. I would never.
Because that's the thing that the hunters that go out with guns, it's like, dude, what if Bigfoot wanted to prove humans exist and they decided to go out and kill your family member just to have proof, I don't think that's cool. Mm-hmm. But if we go by the hit by the bus scenario, an accident, then I don't want to say awesome because I still don't want it to be dead, but it would be awesome to have a body.
Yeah.
And science. Say, all right, there's one right there. All right. Bigfooters, back off. Just back off. Let the scientists come in and look at this.
Yes.
And tell us what's going on here. And that would be phenomenal. And then, yes, that information, if proven valid or shown to be valid, that changes my worldview. My idea changes. And now I incorporate the idea that, all right, so Bigfoot is a species. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Great. I'm not going to sit here all depressed like, oh crap, I was wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be excited. I'm like, there's a freaking Bigfoot. Holy crap, I want to see it.
Yeah. Hey, hold that thought. We'll be right back after some messages from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Dario.
And Chris.
Of Refined Taste Podcast here on the Lunchador Podcast Network. Are you a Rochester foodie or a fan of hilarity? If you answered yes to either or both of those questions, Refined Taste is for you.
Every episode, we talk with representatives of Rochester's food and beverage scene, tell their stories, and have plenty of fun and laughs along the way.
We'd be honored if you checked it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday.
Hey, it's Pauly Guglielmo, host of the Pauly Guglielmo Show here on the Lunchador Podcast Network and founder of Guglielmo Sauce, owner of Craft Cannery, bottling many of your favorite local and regional sauces, dressings, and marinades. You can find Guglielmo's at any area Wegmans or at many local mom and pops around the city.
And we now return to the Mind of Magnus, already in progress. Oh my gosh. So is in that list, actually. So I actually asked my Patreon backers to, and one bunch of them were just simply asked that question. If there's anything in the paranormal world that you feel your ideas do feel there's something to it. Like, is there a concept of, here's one example was like, so we went through Bigfoot, mentioned that already, but like telepathy or premonitions, or like, do you feel like the eyes in the back of you, is there things that fall in the paranormal, like, genre that you still feel that there may be some aspect to it that you want to research that you feel is it could be there, or how do you feel the world works, I guess, is that?
I think the world works pretty simply. And I don't think it's as complicated as we like to make it out to be. These powers, these superpowers, I mean, which basically they are, that's more, I feel, imagination. That's us wanting to have something special, or not understanding the patterns and thinking, all right, well, I thought about this person and then they called me. So that must be some kind of psychic link. No, it doesn't have to be, because how many times did you think about that person and they didn't call? Mm-hmm. We have to look at both sides, not just the hits. We have to look at the misses too. And then look at it all as a whole. And come from there. When it comes to things like, to be honest, I'm a big Star Wars fan, so I would love for the Force to be real. I mean, that would just be phenomenal. And I still do. Every time I watch the movie, or any of the series, you know, I'm looking at them remote and going, I'm waiting. And once in a while, my wife accommodates me. She'll pick up the remote and bring it over.
Oh,
I'm
what
like,
a wonderful woman. Oh,
yes! My God. I got it. But I mean, for the rest of these powers, premonitions and talking to the dead and the feeling that people are looking at you. I mean, there, if you're out in public, people are going to be looking at you. Someone's going to be looking at you. And it just happens to be you looked up at the right time. Maybe somebody finds you interesting. Maybe maybe they think you're hot, you know, and they're looking at you. And you happen to look up at the same time and see them. You know, it's not because you had some super sense that somebody was staring at you. It's just that you happen to look up. I never had that feeling that I'm being watched unless I know someone's in the room. Like, you know, if somebody's in the room with me, you know, I know that somebody's in the room. So I constantly look up to make sure, like, are they not weird? And then it makes me look weird because it looks like I keep looking at them when I'm just checking to see if they're looking at me. Yeah. It's weird. But no, I don't have any kind of those beliefs that telepathy is real or telekinesis or psychokinesis or anything like that. I haven't seen any good evidence of it. I know that in the parapsychology world, they have certain experiments where they claim that it's statistically significant results, but I haven't seen anything that's extraordinary. I haven't seen anything extraordinary, and that's what I'm waiting for.
Interesting.
Sorry, I don't know if that was a good answer.
No, you're fine. There's no wrong answers. I'm getting to know the inside the brain of Kenny Biddle here. I'm loving this. but yeah, have you ever encountered anything that caught you off guard? I mean, like, side note, we joke around about we keep whispering these little stories about that. I did encounter some random stuff over the years that just don't make sense to me. But again, I try to debunk it. I couldn't, you know, there's certain things, but I can only do so much. But have you ever encountered something that falls in that sort of paranormal world that makes you that may have hooked you or get like at least a questioning point in the back of the brain or something?
So that's interesting. And I think that's something that comes up more if you have a strong belief in the paranormal, because I think that's the way people lean, you know, like it's an automatic bias. And I'm not saying that in a mean way. I'm just saying that's a natural decision or a natural way that you might lean if something, quote unquote, strange happens. Like for me, if I hear a noise down the hallway or in another room, or if I hear voices in the distance, or even if I see a shadow or something, my immediate thought is not, it's paranormal. I don't think it's a ghost. I don't think it's a demon. I don't think it's anything like that. I think I saw a shadow. I heard a voice. Let me go figure out what caused it. And I immediately go down to where I think the source was and try to find a source. If I don't find a source, I'm left with, I don't know. Like, that's my conclusion until I find information that leads me to the actual source.
That's great. And that's how I approach the same way. I don't know. I want to know. I may have, and I understand my brain is like, it's trying to look for patterns. It's trying to hear things. It's trying to like, so it's very appreciative. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show. One of my, you know, get a lot more guests in, but I wanted to start with like critical thinking and why you should be approaching, especially in today's world, just especially with AI art happening, visual stuff. There's a lot of things being tossed at us more now, where critical thinking is going to really, really be what, you know, separates us from chaos in the future, I feel like. So
right. I mean, you really have to look at the details. You have to remember that if you don't find a source for whatever experience you had, then you don't know what caused it. That's as simple as I can make it. And to inject your own conclusion, you are fooling yourself and others. If you hear like a voice down the hallway, like you're in this like maybe abandoned building or old building, bunch of rooms on the second floor, you're down one end, you hear a voice down the other, and then you get down there. Now we're thinking maybe 30 seconds to a minute by the time you get down there, maybe more if you know you're trying to build up the courage, which happens. I'm not saying it happens all the time, but it does happen. People get scared, they don't want to go down, they finally start going down, especially when you know friends come with them. You get down there, you don't find the source. If you leave there and say, oh, we heard a ghost. That place is definitely haunted. You have no proof. You have no data to back that up. Mm-hmm. All you have is a conclusion that's unsupported. You don't know the source, and therefore you insert it your own. You literally made up a source in order to explain what happened. And that's something that we see a lot. Sometimes it's referred to as like the God of the gaps, because there's missing information, so you fill it in. Mm-hmm. You fill it in what you think might have happened, and it becomes fact. It doesn't become speculation anymore. It becomes fact. So I think people in the paranormal community need to stop using their assumptions and speculations and presenting it as concrete conclusions, because you're not doing anyone favors. You're not making the community look good at all. You're actually making it look worse by just inserting your own conclusions, your own beliefs, and just stating them as fact when they're not facts. That was my rant.
Oh no, please. I love this one. This is great. My gosh. Being a critical thinker in a place, luckily the United States there's a very good, agnosticism, moving forward, there's a little less superstition, but you had interviewed a person forever ago back. I liked it. Leo, Igwe. Yeah. From Nigeria. And that's a place, I mean, where superstition is such a heavy component to cultures and stuff. It was a remarkable thing. If people want to check it out, you can find it on your I think it was in the
Center for Inquiry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So but you're dealing with people that, like, talking to people that are coming from supremely superstitious backgrounds and stuff. How do you, like, I mean, he must have been really happy to chance to chat with someone like with such true critical thinking and stuff. Like, it continue on. Sorry, I've been tripping.
It's all right. Leo is a great guy. I've known him for a couple of years. We've spoken online, and that was the first time I got to meet him. He came to the States to do some talks to raise awareness about witchcraft and accusations in Nigeria and different parts of the world, because it still goes on. Yeah. And we think, like, this is the year 2024, and there are still places on this planet where people are accused of witchcraft. And once you get that accusation, there is nothing to stop you from killing that person that's accused. And that's some of the pictures that he showed me. We couldn't include in the video. We couldn't include in the magazine or anything, because they were just horrific. We had sons accusing their mothers of witchcraft because they didn't get the job they wanted, or the mother wouldn't give them money, or loan them money. And the son would accuse the mother of witchcraft because they were pissed off at them. And that's it. Like, in that part of the world, once you make an accusation, you go to, I'm forgetting the term exactly, but you basically go to the witch doctor, of the tribe. You don't have to, or their community. You don't have to go to the police. The police are almost useless, and they try. They really try, but they're too spread out, so they can't really do anything. You go to the person for the community, and you say, "Hey, I think this person here, my mother or my neighbor or something, is practicing witchcraft." And that witch doctor can tell you, "Okay, yeah, it's true." So, and that's it. And that's basically licensed to kill them.
Oh my God. Wow.
So there's been bonfires where they've drugged young girls over to it and pushed them into the fire. And you see, like, half their bodies are burned, and because they were pushing them in there, telling them, "Confess, confess." And I mean, obviously the only reason they confessed was to stop it.
Yeah. Torture never gets any good information out. Oh my gosh.
But I mean, that, and like, albinism is if you are born an albino, you are considered to have magic properties.
Yeah.
So they literally, and I spoke to a gentleman that it was such a sad story. He grew up when he was a child, him and his sister both born with albinism, and the parents had conspired with people in the community to come in and not only murder both kids, but dismember them.
Yeah, that's because the pieces are sold as, yes, like, oh God. And this is our contemporary. I mean,
the brother,
this is...
The brother heard something going on and hid under the bed, and he had to hide under there and watch as his sister was brutally dismembered there. I mean, and this isn't just stories. This actually happens, you know, and you might think, oh, it's on the other country, but these are people's beliefs. Mm-hmm. These are good examples of why beliefs can harm people. And maybe it's not that bad here, but I've also seen exorcisms performed here by families that mm-hmm. get pretty violent and kill people. So, I mean, we can talk about that later too, if you want to, but yeah.
You're more welcome to. That's the reason I brought it up, was because I wanted to show an example of how far down superstition and that mindset can be dangerous for people. I mean, the process of a family and a brother and sister, the whole thing, that's just jarring. I mean, but I wanted to go that as a comparison to show why we need to be focusing now, because it is a weirdly slippery slope where beliefs lead into witch hunts, into whatever it may be. So yeah, like I actually met a woman forever ago back, who's actually at a conference, that her mom was suffering from mental illness, her daughter was possessed. So was like, you know, pretty much tortured because her mom was trying to get the demons out of her. I met her. This has happened back in the 80s, whatever it was, early on. She's an adult woman. I met her. But she was talking about how dangerous these beliefs and understandings really were. And it locked in my brain early on of why we should be focusing on that. That's one of the reasons why I want to have you on. So it's this. Ugh.
Yeah. I mean, I've done a show. I did a podcast a while back, like maybe a year or two ago, where we talked about exorcisms that were being performed. And the inspiration for that show came from a video that we were sent by a family member. And they showed like a young girl being held down, and like one of the family members kneeling on her chest, and they're holding her hands down, her legs down, and she's screaming to get off of me, get off me, because they were hurting her.
Yeah.
And they're beating her, and they're doing horrible things. And this happens because of that belief that she was possessed, where in reality, she probably had some kind of either behavioral problem or mental problem that should have been looked at by a professional and then treated, not held down on a floor with somebody's knee burying into their chest. You know, and I mean, if you go onto the website, there's a website called What's the Harm. Mm-hmm. And if you go check that out, you can look up exorcisms and psychics and all kinds of things like this. And it'll give you examples that you can look up and confirm, where moms, dads kill their children. Brothers and sisters kill each other because they either think that the people are possessed and they're trying to drown them. They're drowning them to try to get the demons to release them, and they end up killing their siblings. It's horrible stuff. So, I mean, even though we're talking more about like ghost hunting and stuff like that, you're right. It's a slippery slope with the scale of belief and how far those beliefs go. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, I mean, it does matter the severity of the belief, but looking at small beliefs, like I believe demons are real, to my son is possessed and I'm going to hold his head underwater until, you know, I think the demon's gone. We still have to address all of these beliefs mm-hmm. and put some critical thinking to them. Are they real? Are they justified? You know, can we change them? Mm-hmm. Do you have to live by them? You know, and this is just some of the things that we can think about.
So we're coming up on the hour now, but so in the world of Kenny Biddle, what would be the ways? I know never stop learning is a sentence you always say at the end of your TikToks and your videos and stuff right that
there.
Way.
Right there.
Oh, there it is. Nice, nice, nice. It truly is. So as we're learning, what sort of processes and what should we be learning? What's the next step to help we having the best critical thinking when we're moving forward? What are the things like we should be thinking about? My audience can take away from this.
Read. Don't rely on TV ghost hunting shows. Don't rely on documentaries that are heavy on the paranormal, because they're going to show you entertainment. And that's why they're in business. Go for the scientific literature. Look for the skeptical literature. I mean, even if you don't want to be a skeptic, we're all skeptic of something. Mm-hmm. All of us are skeptics of something. So don't think it's like not for you, because it's everybody. But look at the literature that's put out. Skeptical Inquirer does a lot with those kind of topics. We put articles out, we put videos out, we hold lectures, but read some books. There's plenty of books in the science section. Mary Roach, she does excellent books. One is called Spook, which is excellent about the afterlife. And I mean, Ben Radford has Scientific Paranormal Investigation. Joe Nickel has a whole bunch of books on paranormal claims and ghosts and investigating mysteries like that. Go check these things out and read, see what the other side is. See what the other side is saying. And maybe you can incorporate some of that information. And then for me, I also suggest you watch TV shows like Monk and Castle. Mm-hmm. These kind of shows, I mean, I love watching these because they give me ideas. They're detective stories. They're solving mysteries. They're having fun too. Columbo was a great show, you know, because the critical thinking is all throughout those stories. Every episode is about critical thinking. Scooby-Doo is about critical thinking. You know, yes. Like, I mean, that's the cartoon. They solve mysteries in a half hour, under a half hour. No ghost hunting team does that. None, you know, but stuff like that, you know, pay attention to those things. And there's plenty of books out there that talk about critical thinking. And I mean, it's one of the books I love. This is a book that I got, the Investigative Reporter's Handbook. Mm-hmm. This is the fifth edition, but I mean, it's great. It tells you about how to investigate your stories, and a lot of the information in here you can apply to your investigations. Nice. So there you go.
Well, that is amazing. My gosh, I'm going to put those, some of those books in the show notes. If anyone's leading along, you can see on the bottom of that. So if people want to follow you, where can we find Kenny Biddle? Where's the best places to learn more about what you're doing, what's happening, your notes? Where's your happy places?
Oh, my happy places right here in my office. I love it. I spend more time here than anywhere else.
I would too. That's an amazing. I said, you're watching videos and stuff, seeing you in your office do stuff. There's a bit of envy every time I see you solving mysteries in your own office that way. So,
well, if you ever come up to like the Niagara Falls area, let me know and I'll give you a tour of the facility.
I will totally be this. My gosh. So
we have so much more. We have tons of display cases out here. I when I came on board, I really started pushing to show more, to make this place a visitor center, you know. Nice. So they've given me free rein. And then the rest of the staff here, all my coworkers, they are on board. They're awesome. I work with great people. And we've been revitalizing this place for visitors. So if you're in Buffalo, contact me. Come on out. I'll give you a tour.
The center of inquiry. I shall be there. Oh, I actually will, side note, I'll spin back around. If you ever need help creating something, you have a project that, like, you watch a video, you need to try to help figuring how to do it. I have a studio here. I build stuff. I like, you know, doing these sort of things. I will gladly help you debunk or work on a project that way. I will help pull the strings, whatever you need. I'm not that far from Buffalo. So if you ever need a hand, just something that debunking, I will gladly. My studio is all yours to help build something.
Awesome. So, and yeah. That's the thing I love doing when I recreate some of the videos, like Eric behind the wall. He works in the office behind this wall. He has been my ghost so many times. Just like his arms sometimes, or just him running around. I make him a silhouette, but we have so much fun. And we just did a video. I haven't even released it yet. But after I'm done here, I'm going to fix it up. My arch nemesis on TikTok, he put out another couple balloon videos, and we just recreated them. Nice. And Eric helped me. And so they look great. We had fun with it, and they'll be up soon. But anyway, if you want to know more or follow some of the work that I do, you can go to skepticalinquirer.org. Mm-hmm. That's where most of my stuff is. You can type in my name in Kenny Biddle, and it'll come up with my articles and my videos. We also have the Center for Inquiry YouTube channel, which most of my videos are up on there. Every Friday night, I do the Skeptical Help Bar live stream from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And that streams on my own YouTube channel under Kenny Biddle. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Kenny Biddle 42 on TikTok. You know, come out and see all the videos that I recreate and piss off people.
You seem like you do, like, side note, that was another one too. It seemed like you do have some cranky comments on there here and there. So,
yeah.
But you handle it well. Kudos for handling it. That's a big thing. So
it rolls off, man. It's you gotta have a thick skin. And there's just people that are angry, and I get it. You know, they have their beliefs. I challenge their beliefs. I might show their beliefs are wrong, and they're angry about it. And I get it. So I don't hold it against them. You know, they can be angry. Go ahead, vent. What am I going to do? You know, waste my afternoon arguing with somebody? Nah.
Yeah, no. Nah. No, my gosh, no. My gosh. Well, Kenny Biddle, thank you for being here. I'm going to hang out a little longer because I'm going to get some factoids for the second, my other bit of a podcast I do, the Factoid Fridays, if I followed that way. So, Kenny, thanks for being here. You're amazing. I'm so happy that we crossed paths forever ago back, and you'll always have a skeptical, critical thinking friend here. So
awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So this has been another episode of The Mind of Magnus. Thanks for joining in, folks. As always, you can find me on my social medias, Magnus Apollo. I still use Twitter. I like it there. Please say hi. Instagram is where I share most of my other stuff. Magnus Apollo on, I even do TikTok until that gets banned. So thanks so much. And that number for the Factoid Hotline, 585-310-2473.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.